Let us read in Luke chapter 10 again, and verse 41 and 42. Luke chapter 10, verse 41 and 42. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary has chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her. Overwhelmed. Overscheduled, exhausted. Three words that really define our culture and the way many of us are living. Or as the title of Kevin DeYoung's book put it, crazy busy. It's very hard, isn't it, in the midst of that kind of life or lifestyle to nurture the soul. To have, as Phil Ryken put it in his commentary, a Mary heart in a Martha world. And, of course, as this passage really brings home to us, it's not such a new problem. It's an issue that's been with the human race and with God's people from Genesis 3 onwards. Here we have two sisters representing two quite different lives, two different ways to live. And Jesus telling us which one to follow. We'd like to look, first of all, at the simple life. Then, secondly, at the stressed out life. And then, thirdly, at Jesus' pronouncement, his verdict, his description of the best life. First of all, here we have the simple life. Mary's life. Two things are told us about her. First of all, we're told in verse 39, she sat at Jesus' feet, and secondly, she heard his word. The scenario here is that this house of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus was, it looks like Jesus' favorite house to be in all the world. They were his best friends. Outside his circle of 12 disciples, it would appear that it was a house he often dropped in on. It was in Bethany, a suburb of Jerusalem. And he clearly felt quite relaxed about dropping in without warning, which it appears is what happened here. We read in verse 38, it came to pass as they went that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. So Jesus turns up, Martha lets him in, Martha rushes to the kitchen, starts fixing some food. Mary, she stops. She watches Jesus come in and sit down, and then we read, she also sat at Jesus' feet. So Martha's away busy in the background. Mary is sitting still. She's got a prime spot just in front of Jesus. She sits down, which was the posture in these days of a student before a rabbi, before a teacher. And in fact, the only official students accepted by the rabbi were permitted to sit around his feet. If you saw a rabbi teaching, you saw those sitting around his feet. They were the students that had, as it were, enrolled and paid their tuition, you might say. They were the official students. All the others were You know, they had to be in the background. And so this is actually quite a remarkable scene, because the rabbis of these days would not permit women to be amongst their official students. In fact, many of the rabbis wouldn't even let women learn the Torah. And some of them did make an exception and did allow for women to read the Torah, the Old Testament. But even these progressives, you might say, forbade any woman actually being an official student. And that's why I remember when we looked at 1 Timothy, where Paul gives instructions about male and female roles and relationships, and he says, let the woman learn. That itself was quite a staggering statement. And here it's exemplified for us here. Jesus here is making a massive statement in enrolling, as it were, this woman into his class, allowing her to sit at his feet, permitting her to learn. And she takes full advantage of this privilege. It gets up close, sits in the prime spot. In fact, it's quite interesting. When we look at the Gospels, Mary appears three times, and each of the three times, she's sitting at Jesus' feet. And for example, here, she listens to his word at his feet. In John 11:32, she falls at Jesus' feet and pours out her heart to him when Lazarus died. And in John 12:3, she poured out perfume and worship on his feet. Three times at his feet. It's a position of submission, a position of teachability, a position of humility. It's beautiful, isn't it? Sitting at Jesus' feet. But we're also told, and heard his word. She wasn't just making up numbers. She just wasn't just taking a position. She was there with a purpose. He wasn't just teaching. She was also learning here. She was hanging on every word. She just kept listening and listening and listening, if we were to translate it literally. And it's really, it's a very simple life. Mary's life. Sitting, listening, learning. Sitting, listening, learning. And it's idyllic, really. I'm sure every one of us here would envy Mary. But it was really bugging her sister, who's in the kitchen, working away. She's probably hearing snippets of this conversation as Jesus teaches. And here she is, sweating away, trying to rustle up some food and drink and hospitality. And all she can think about is her sister sitting there while she is slaving here. And eventually it clearly gets too much for her. She loses it. She bursts in and explodes in a bad temper. Martha was cumbered about much serving and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Bid her, therefore, that she help me. This simple life is not going to be a very popular life with many. It's not going to be understood. The prioritizing of sitting at Jesus' feet to learn, to listen and learn in a humble, teachable spirit, that's like way down most people's lists of priorities. Even, it has to be said, many Christians. So we can expect this kind of result if this is the right kind of life and this is the life we live. We'll wait and see what Jesus says as to whether this is the best life or not. Because really it's contrasted, secondly, with this stressed out life of Martha. And there are five things that strike us. First of all, it's a busy life. Notice it says in verse 40, she was cumbered about much serving. She wasn't just serving, it was much serving. It would appear she wasn't just making one course, she was making multiple courses. It wasn't just the simplest meal. It was a complicated meal she was putting together. Much serving, great detail. Everything had to be just so. There was a kind of perfectionism, it would appear, in this. Busy, busy, busy. Secondly, this was a distracted life. That's what cumbered about means. It means distracted by everything round about. It's literally pulled here and there and everywhere. If you can imagine Martha's life like a circle, and activity being little arrows coming out of the circle, there were arrows going in every direction, all round the circle. She was being pulled here, there, everywhere. Her life was just going in all sorts of directions. And yet, as we'll see, she was absolutely missing the center. There was all this going on around about, all these arrows going out, but no arrow going in. She missed the center. Thirdly, she's angry. It's an angry life. So it says she bursts in, she explodes, and notice her words. Lord, do you not care? These are really shocking words. Imagine. This woman comes to the Lord of glory. I said, do you not care? The very Lord who cared so much that he gave up heaven to come to earth, that he came and lived in human flesh, who cared so much that he lived for 33 years here in the midst of such sin and suffering and misery, who cared so much that he went around preaching, 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 healing, 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 listening, 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 counseling, 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 and up comes this woman and says, do you not care? It's staggering, isn't it? But this is what happens when we get over busy and over distracted. We become irrational and illogical. And we start lashing out at people who care for us the most. We get angry and we act irrationally. We can, maybe all we focus on is, well, what he's not doing and she's not doing and what they're not doing. And the problem really is all that we are doing. We don't see it. Anger makes us irrational. We get overworked. We get over anxious. We get overtired. And we lose perspective. We lose a biblical worldview. We no longer see ourselves and our world and God as we ought. This is a stressed out life. It's a busy life. It's a distracted life. It's an angry life. And it's a selfish life. The busier, the more distracted, the angrier we get, the more selfish we become. Here, what does Martha say? She says, my sister has left me to serve alone. See, it's all about me. It's all about what I'm doing. I'm serving, and I'm serving alone. She sits here and I do all the work. She's not lifting a hand to help me. A stressed out life is a demanding life. Fifthly, notice her demand. Bitter, therefore, that she help me. Again. God forbid we ever fall into this trap. Here is Mary, and she's listening to all that the Lord would say to her. Just listening, listening, listening. And in comes Martha and says, here are the words you should speak. She's not listening, is she? She stopped listening. And as a result, she starts demanding. The Lord's words are pouring into Mary's ears, and here Martha comes and says, I'm going to pour my words into your mouth, Lord. She comes to God and commands him and demands that he do this. Bid her therefore that she help me do this and do it now and do it to her. Well, I'm sure many of us here recognize these symptoms, don't we? We recognize this as our life maybe right now, or it has been, or maybe it's heading in this direction. And maybe like Martha, we are full of self-righteousness and self-justification, and we're able to persuade ourselves that this is the right life and everyone else is wrong. We end up in this busy, distracted, angry, selfish, demanding state. Overwhelmed, overscheduled, exhausted, irrational. And so Jesus has got a choice here, doesn't he? He sees the simple life, and he sees the stressed out life. And Martha's demanding, make the choice. Declare who's in the right here. She's really demanding that he vindicate her and condemn Mary. And so Jesus replies and really picks the best life for us between these two. Jesus answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful. And that's really how he sums up these two lives. Here's the simple life. It's a one thing life. And here's the stressed out life. It's a many things life. Many unnecessary things. One necessary thing. You are careful and troubled about many things. Notice his analysis of Martha's life, how he counsels her here, and her many unnecessary things. He says, first of all, Martha, Martha. He addresses her affectionately. This way of speaking in these days, this repetition of a personal name, was the main way of expressing love and affection. It was a term, it was a way of really expressing endearment. He wasn't coming at her with a big hammer to smash her in pieces. He wasn't coming, as it were, with total condemnation. He comes alongside her and says, Martha, my dear, dear Martha. And he sets this up so beautifully, doesn't he? Establishes, first of all, this relationship with her. And makes clear, whatever I'm going to say, Martha, is coming from love for you, and affection for you, and my desire for your best. Martha, Martha. He addresses her affectionately. Secondly, he acknowledges her turmoil. He doesn't just go straight to what she said. Notice he says, you're careful or anxious and troubled about many things. You're disturbed and you're divided, is the literal way of putting this. There's an inner anxiety and there's an outward multiplicity of stresses. And again, this is very much a beautiful counseling strategy, you might say, this coming alongside, this saying, look, I feel your pain. I note the state you're in. I sense you, not just all the outward demands, but I know how much this is troubling your soul and your heart. Again, just beautiful relationship building, establishing again this empathy and sympathy and bond with her. But he doesn't just stop there. He doesn't say, oh, Martha, I love you, and I see you're really stressed. No, he goes further. Doesn't leave her there. Because really, him saying this, You're careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful. He's doing two things there. He's saying, see these many things, Martha, that are dividing and disturbing you, and overwhelming you? Come away from them. Leave them be. These many things, too many things. Sure, a sandwich would be fine, but you don't need all these courses. You don't need all this complexity. You don't need all this perfectionism. You don't need to put on such a show. Just dropped in here to your house for some friendships and fellowship and some refreshment, and you're turning it into a nightmare. Come away from it. Leave the many things, the many unnecessary things. That's an element that's necessary of, yeah, feed me, but not to this extent. Not a five-star, five-course meal, as it were. Come away from that. And he gives a replacement. Again, in counseling, you can't just tell someone, stop that. You've got to give them something to start. You see that in the epistles. You often find the Apostle Paul saying things like, put off the old man and put on the new. He's not just saying, stop this. He's saying, start that. It's habit replacement therapy, you might say. And this is what he's doing here. He's saying, don't just stop that. Start this. And the way to stop that is to start this. This one necessary thing. He's really saying, look, Martha, if you would come and listen to me, you'd view that meal differently. Your whole perspective on life would change. If you would just take a minute or two to pause, to be still, to sit at my feet, to listen to my words, your worldview would be transformed. You'd begin to see your to-do list shrink. And you'd begin to see that so many of the things that in this mental stressed out state you think are absolutely imperative to be done today, they've all got lots of ticks beside them. Or just, we can rub them out. Yeah, ideally, perfectly, if possible, but not necessary, not imperative, not obligation. This crushing load of expectation and performancism, we might call it. Many unnecessary things. I wonder what the Lord would point to in our own lives if he was to come and look at us in the way that he did with Martha. What things would suddenly disappear from all that we've got to do tomorrow morning? Or even in the remainder of today? Many unnecessary things. And then he says, but there's one necessary thing. He's saying, in terms of to-dos, there's only one thing to do. One thing that's of all things, the only one that you could put beside the column, must do, have to do. There's one thing needful, and Mary has chosen that good part. And it's, you might, some people translate this, Mary has chosen the main course. He's saying to Martha, you've made oodles of appetizers, you've made lots of starters, you're piling up the desserts and the aperitifs, and you've missed the main course. Mary has chosen the good part, the main course, the primary thing, the only necessary thing in life, which is to sit at the feet of Christ and listen and learn. In fact, he goes further. He says, which shall not be taken away from her. It's not only a main course, it's a permanent course. He's saying all this food, it will come and it will go, and we'll forget about it by tomorrow. What did you have for food last Monday? I have no idea. What did you hear last Sunday night? Well, if you were here, I'm sure you still remember. a very special evening when we sat at the feet of Jesus and he was revealed to us in that encounter with Jacob. That's not going to be taken away from us. That has abiding, lasting impact that changes us, not just for this life, but forever. It will not be taken away from her. He's saying, Martha, copy your sister. You've come in here and you said, make Mary like me. And I'm saying, Martha, be like Mary. You've given me a choice between this stressed out life or this simple life. And I'm telling you, choose this simple life. Choose the main course. Choose the permanent food for your soul. Put down your spoon, your apron, your pots and your pans. Or maybe in our day, put down your phone and your computer and your books and just come and sit at my feet. Listen and learn. We don't have time this evening, really, to give very practical ways of doing this. Let me say two things about that. First of all, I can recommend some books to you. One book is called Essentialism. Essentialism, the Disciplined Pursuit of Less. Not a Christian book, but this is not just a Christian problem. Even the world is recognizing the damaging, destructive effects of a stressed out, distracted, busy, angry, selfish life and are trying to find strategies and finding many helpful strategies. Another book just published in the past week by Michael Horton called Ordinary. The subtitle is Sustainable Faith in a Radical, Restless World. It's more theological. Should be readable for most of us here. And maybe in between these two books is a book called Simplify, 10 Practices to Unclutter Your Soul. So there are many resources out there. If you really want to live a simple life, a one thing life, a one necessary thing life. But the more I've thought about this, the more I've come to the conclusion that yes, these books are useful and helpful, but really what this passage is telling us is that if we would sit more and listen more at the feet of Christ, everything else would fall into the right place. Everything else will end up in the right list. That sitting and listening will change our perspective and our priorities in permanent ways. One thing is needful. What does this tell us? It tells us, first of all, in conclusion, Jesus knows our lives. Just as he knew Martha's life here, he knows the multiplicity of tasks, the complexity of life, the balancing acts that many of us are involved in, and the detrimental impact of that on our health and our relationships, and above all, our spirituality. Jesus knows that. We can't hide it from him. Secondly, Jesus convicts our hearts about this. He exposes here the selfish motives in Martha and her snapping at Mary. Again, I'm sure many of us know this. When we end up in that stressed out life, then, we start sinning. Especially in our relationships, especially with loved ones. And this passage convicts us. of all those we too have lost our temper with, for no fault of theirs, often when they're doing the right thing and we're doing the wrong thing. Thirdly, this passage, Jesus rearranges our priorities. He upends our whole to-do list. And he puts right at the top of it, sit and listen. Sit and listen. Sit and listen. If we could sort of imprint on our minds and hearts and souls this thing, one thing needful. One thing needful. One thing needful. One necessary thing. One necessary thing. One necessary thing. And that became part of us, it would change all our priorities. It would change the way we get up in the morning. It would change the way we go to bed at night. Would change everything. Fourthly, here, Jesus rebalances our lives. It's interesting that this passage comes just after the parable of the Good Samaritan, which is all about go and do, go and do, go and do. And maybe recognizing that that's going to result in a lot of people going and doing, going and doing, going and doing, he then engineers in his providence this incident and event so that he can also say, you've got to balance going and doing with sitting and listening. Sit and listen, sit and listen, sit and listen. Don't just make it all go and do. But neither should it be all sit and listen. There has to be a balance. But the core of life is sit and listen, sit and listen. Fifthly here, Jesus defends our devotion. It may be that we feel guilty when we go to pray. We feel guilty when we go to commune with the Lord Jesus. We feel guilty maybe when we open our Bibles in private and we think, well, all these things have to be done. And if I don't do them, then so-and-so will be disappointed. And maybe so-and-so will say, well, what happened there? And why haven't you done this? And maybe the house won't be kept as it should be. Or maybe this business deal won't be completed as it should be. And I've got all these accusations. Conscience accusing us, the devil accusing us, maybe others accusing us. And here, just as in this situation of accusations against Mary, Jesus steps in as the interceder, as the advocate, as the defender of his people, and says, leave it alone. Leave her alone. It's beautiful to see the way he defends her devotional time with him. And so when we feel and hear and sense these voices, then let's remember we have a defender who is interceding and saying, leave it alone. Leave him alone. But finally here we see Jesus feeds our hunger. You see, really Martha was taken up with how can I feed him? And he's come to this house really with this question, how can I feed them? Here's Martha in the kitchen preparing a banquet, and Mary's at his feet enjoying a banquet. Feeding, being nourished, being strengthened with his word. It's really saying Jesus prizes our fellowship and our friendship more than our acts of service. He values them too, but in terms of priority, he's saying, I enjoy serving you more than I enjoy you serving me. I enjoy feeding you more than I enjoy you feeding me. He looks at all our ministries and all our service and he says, don't, whatever you do, let this come between you and me. Don't let Christian ministry and service come between friendship and fellowship with Jesus. Really, what he was saying to Martha was, your company means more to me than your cooking. Come and enjoy me. Come and be my friend. Come and let's just enjoy one another together. He's saying, this is the best life. This is the life I put my stamp of approval upon. One thing needful. One thing necessary. I'm sure the young people here have many dreams, many aims, many ambitions. Some of them, I'm sure, are really good and worthwhile. They hopefully involve serving the Lord in a calling, a vocation, a job, a course of study. You're not doing it just for yourself. You feel this is the best way to develop your talents, use your skills, and be equipped to serve the Lord in the home or in the workplace or in the church. That's wonderful. But it's not necessary. There's only one thing necessary. Only one thing. You must put a tick beside before you die. And it's this: friendship with Jesus. That's the only necessity in life. Whether we're old or young or in between, whatever else is on your to-do list, make sure this is on it, right at the top, and that nothing else gets done until it's done. Believe Jesus' words here. One thing needful. So that he can say of you, and you've chosen the good part, which can never be taken away from you. Amen. Let's pray.